Welcome back, folks. Yes, you might be asking, what is this all about? And all honesty, I have no idea. It's just Michael Heck exercising authority over the show, or trying to exercise authority over the show once again.
Yes,
Michael, welcome to the
once
show.
Once again, thank you, Newell. It is, what do they call it? Authority without responsibility. It's a very dangerous combination.
Your favorite experience, I know.
It is. That was Muskrat Ramble by Louis Armstrong. And I played that because The Economist magazine just put out a piece on New Orleans. It actually was kind of a hatchet job called Should America Keep Subsidizing a Sinking City? I wrote them back a letter and I said, yes, just like America subsidizes everything that's important to the nation. But the subtitle of the article is Muskrat Ramble, so it's been on my mind.
Absolutely. So still 20 years later, we're having to defend something that was brought about in the Louisiana Purchase for good reason then, which still holds true today, right?
Yeah, it's pretty extraordinary that, 300 years ago, this place was bought basically because it was the least bad place to put an economically and strategically essential city and fortification. And it remains so today. About 60% of our country's grain comes out through our, I'm sorry, 90% of our country's grain comes out through our port. We produce an amount of LNG that stabilizes the world that would make us number three in the world if we were ranked as a country. And the culture of this place, from the music to the food to Mardi Gras, is something that is deeply part of the New Orleans and American identity. So it's a bit of a, unserious question to ask if we should keep subsidizing this place, particularly when the reason why we are sinking is because we levied the river for trade that benefits the whole country. And Katrina was caused by basically an engineering failure of the National U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, not by anything that anybody here did wrong. So, yeah, as you can tell, it got under my skin a little bit. And 20 years later, we're still having the same conversation.
Yes.
Sorry, Newell.
Now, you're having an event called Action in the Face of Adversity, Recovery, Reform, and How It Got Done to commemorate this. Is that today or is it tomorrow?
No, that's today. That's in 45 minutes. So I'm going to drive over, actually, while you're doing your second half of the show with Deanna Rodriguez from Entergy and get ready. But we've got a full afternoon planned featuring individuals, many of whom are folks who we know and admire and respect, Kim Boyle, Andy Coplin, Alden McDonald, Tim Coulon, Walt Leger, the father, Doris Voce, Bishop Tom Watson, Ann Milling, Leslie Jacobs, Jay LaPere, James Carter, Greg Rusevich. And they're going to be talking about two things. One is what they were able to do as part of the Katrina recovery, whether they were part of a formal public entity like the Recovery Authority or the Bring New Orleans Back Commission. Or then the second panel is going to be those individuals that just went out and did it on their own, like Ann Milling did with Women of the Storm. And we're going to ask them to explain what they did, and then even more importantly, how they did it. And hopefully, Newell, what we do with this, and we're going to record it to keep it for posterity. Hopefully, we are inspiring people with these stories. But even more importantly, we're kind of paying forward or giving people the template so that if they're ever faced with some type of extraordinary event, they understand that even as individuals without formal authority, they have it in their ability to drive important positive change.
Would you commit to me one thing, Michael? Would you send that tape to all of the mainstream media? I've been saying all week, I've been watching what they've put out there, And in many cases, they have just completely missed it. And I'm hearing this from a lot of folks. They're like completely frustrated by what's out there. And I don't know. I guess we all probably share some of the blame here. But I made the observation the other day that, you know, when you watch this, and the primary focus has always been on the lower nine, one would think that that is the major economic epicenter of the city of New Orleans, and it all started and ends right there. They missed a lot of what you just talked about, a lot of what was actually done, a lot of why the course of the conversation went in certain directions in trying to reestablish the tax base of this area in the immediate aftermath of Katrina in order to keep its government alive and on life support, thinking about the future. And we tried to make it about a lot of other things that it was never really about at all. Nobody had ever experienced the breadth and depth of the devastation that was heaped upon us by this cataclysmic event. And they just miss it. I don't know what your thoughts are.
No. I mean, you know, that's the whole reason, Noel, we're doing this event, is that we wanted to create, memorialize, and be able to send out the facts on the ground, which is that this was a much more nuanced event, that there were extraordinary heroic acts over, frankly, not just in the aftermath, but over many years to help bring this place back in many ways better than before. And that these kind of simplistic, trite, cliched ideas and images really do a disservice, again, not just to the people of New Orleans, but to the entire country and world, because there are a lot of lessons that can be learned from this if it's seen in its totality. It was because, and in some cases, Noel, I think it's just laziness. In some cases, it's ideological. There seem to be publications, both domestic and international, that want to be able to look down on this place and ask why those crazy Cajuns ever build down there by the water. But in any case, I think it's very important that we speak truth to the media and to the public. And hopefully what we're creating today will last and inform the media and maybe even research going forward. So that's why we're doing our own version of almost a story core for the folks that made it happen 20 years ago.
And look, it's not, and you and I have talked about this. It didn't all go perfectly, right? And nor it could it ever, quite frankly, with so many moving parts and so many things outside of the control of leaders, whether it was business leaders, government leaders, or otherwise. You are never going to herd everything that needed to be herded in order to get it done. But if we look critically as where we are 20 years later, I just had Glade Bilby on this afternoon. They're going to have, a groundbreaking of they're going to start working on the roof of the municipal auditorium. You know, $38 million dollars has been sitting out there forever and a day. That's been dedicated to that facility. And that's how FEMA works, as you well know. You know, it's dollars to restore, you know, what's there, not to necessarily improve, but to restore. And you got to figure out how to leverage that. And it's just it's kind of a shame, you know. And, you know, we still got some big projects like the Lindy Box on you know, over there in Mid-City, sitting there, totally destroyed in there. It looks like Plaza Tower may have a lifeline, you know, that's come their way. But just we still, 20 years later, have a lot to do, quite frankly.
Yeah, I think that you could certainly point out the places that we have failed. I think it's important to point out the places where we have succeeded. You know, for example, the most basic one that the world doesn't necessarily appreciate, which is that the $15 billion hurricane and storm damage system that we put in the water around the South Shore means that if we were hit by a Hurricane Katrina-like event tomorrow, we would be bone dry. We fixed that one. Yeah. And I was talking to Doug Thornton at an event yesterday at the dedication for Bob Livingston over at the UNO Tech Park. And he said, you know, Michael, looking back on the dome and looking back on everything that we had to do to bring back a city that and a region that was almost 100% underwater for weeks, he said, I don't think people understand how close this place was to not coming back, how many extraordinary efforts, and in some cases, how many things had just to fall into place in order for us to not just come back, but to come back to the point where we just hosted the greatest Super Bowl ever, where we have a burgeoning tech sector, where we're building the only greenfield new multi-billion dollar port in the country, where we are the epicenter of the energy revolution, where we're still the number two or number one city in America for travelers. This was not foregone as a conclusion in the weeks and months after Katrina. It was a lot of efforts, and there are many people who get credit, including one who I think does not get enough credit, is Kathleen Blanco. A lot of people are mentioning that to me, Governor Blanco.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there were some things that were done. Obviously, the immediate response to the storm was not good. And, you know, I did a piece that we're going to air on WWL about, you know, folks asked me about what was the most frustrating thing in the aftermath of Katrina. And I said it was the level of friction that existed between the federal government, state government, and local government. And it was like we were constantly fighting our own in order to figure out what the next steps were going to be. And a lot of that is, you know, and I think a lot of folks learned a very important lesson. You cannot rely on FEMA. And it's not a criticism of FEMA. FEMA is a part-time agency. I've said this a million times. If you don't control it, it ain't going to happen. So you got to figure out how to control it. And that requires investment at the local level. There's a big discussion about the future of FEMA, and I did my monologue on this morning. We can do it better, more effective, and efficiently. The problem that we have is that we cannot risk our agencies by putting them out there, putting the human capital, having to backfill with overtime, and creating these task forces if we don't have a paymaster that can make us whole in a very short period of time. Whether that be the state or the federal government. And without that
reimbursement period, right?
Yeah. I mean, it cannot be you're closing your books on Katrina. I think we closed our Katrina books in 2015 or 16. Not because of any fault of our own. We had already done it. We've already rehabbed all the stuff that we had money for. We're just trying to get the money. I mean, but you know, I was one of those that I had enough money set aside. I didn't have to borrow any money of any of those loan programs because I recognized that we had to set ourselves up financially to be able to sustain ourselves for a long period of time, and I couldn't rely on anybody else. But not everyone has the ability to do so for a whole host of reasons and constraints. You know, and hopefully we're going to be able to redefine FEMA. I don't think FEMA should go away by any stretch of the imagination, but we ought to redefine their role. And because I do strongly believe that we can do it better than they can. If the alignment is right. Your thoughts?
No, I think that's right. And what FEMA brings is scale. Right, because it's the entire nation. So we need to figure a way to federalize that scale to get the cash where it needs to be. But then always, local control is going to be quicker and more relevant. So I think it's entirely appropriate to rethink it. But I do think that cash flow issue is, is the key one. And another part of this, something that General Honoré, the Category 5 general, first said to me, and I've never forgotten it, it's that as a nation, we have to learn to get to the left side of the disaster curve. which means to put in policies and to execute on those policies so that when there is a natural hazard, and we're going to see more and more of them in the future, they don't become disasters. That's really the only way out of this, is to make sure mm-hmm. that we no longer have to be resilient in the sense that we get knocked down and get back up again, but we're resilient in the true scientific sense, which is that we actually don't break in the first place. And that is, that's truly the way out of this as a nation, to not have to rely on FEMA, because we've built and planned our communities in a way that they don't get flooded or they don't burn down. And so we need to work on both sides, both parts of the equation.
Yeah, the one component that's, you know, the frailty of what I discussed is that, you know, when we elect leaders, or, you know, what we think are leaders, they can't be afraid to make a decision. And in the aftermath of Katrina, we had a lot of folks that were really afraid to make decisions. And there was kind of a short-term hiatus for some who ultimately ended up making decisions. And I would put Aaron Broussard in that category. He finally started making decisions and standing up to be the leader that a lot of folks knew him to be. And when he did, you know, what happened to Jefferson Parish is it just took off. I mean, yep. And we came back faster than anyone.
That's right.
Because we recognized that we could once we started making decisions, you know. But, you know, the city, unfortunately, wallowed in indecision for a long, long time. I mean, maybe a decade after the storm.
It's why you need a military-type leader to say either lead, follow, or get out of the way. And otherwise, the political disincentives for making a decision can really cause a place to stagnate for even longer than it needs to.
Well, you know, that's why I tell folks, when you're electing your mayor, you have to have someone that's going to be willing to consume political capital. You cannot yep. fear it, you know, because if you do, it'll just gobble you up, and then you wallow in indecision and you don't know how to turn it around. And quite frankly, more often than not, when you engage in a delay, hence, you know, Governor Blanco, you don't recover.
Yep,
and it ends up
right.
consuming you, right?
Yeah, it's I was just talking to somebody and they said, when you think about electing your next mayor, you have to think about you're electing them for wartime, not peacetime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. It's true in many respects. Well, we'll let you get off to your important event, and we thank you for joining us. And final thoughts?
I just want to let everybody know, everybody who suffered and lost through Katrina in the immediate aftermath and the years following, that there are so many people out here who are still fighting, who are still being compelled to move forward by that memory. And the way that we are intending to honor those who suffered and lost is by continuing to build a city and region that fulfills its true promise. So even though Katrina was a generation ago, its memory and the power of that memory is still very fresh.
Yep, absolutely. Michael, as always, thank you so much for your time and your insight. And I'm not sure if we'll see you this Friday at the Presbyter for the Lieutenant Governor's event. But if not, have a great Labor Day weekend.
Great. Thank you, Noel. And thank you for everything that you did 2 decades ago as well.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870. When we come back, we will visit with the CEO of Entergy New Orleans, Deanna Rodriguez. So stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are pleased to have Deanna Rodriguez, CEO of Entergy New Orleans. Deanna, welcome to the show.
Hi, Newell. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you. Long time no see. Where you been?
I know.
No,
I've been prepping for storms. How about that? We haven't been on, and that's a good thing. It's not something I normally do. So thank you for not having me on the other parts of the year.
Exactly. That's typically how this works, right?
That's right.
the fewer times you're on the show, the better it is for the community.
That's exactly right. I'm not a superstar like you, so this is always anxiety causing, but it is also an opportunity to kind of share some of our experiences and prep our customers for storms as we get ready for them, and then also and today's case, talking about what we did when we needed to and how we rose to the occasion after Katrina.
So let's start there. Obviously, I don't know that Entergy has faced as serious an impact of a storm as Katrina. There's been some, but maybe none that have, you know, get anywhere close. Tell us about those post-Katrina days.
Well, what's interesting, I'm going to tell you a couple of things, both personally and then professionally, because we are sort of in this moment of reflection, and there's a lot of trauma for a lot of folks. So I really want to make a point to recognize that. And as a corporate citizen and as an employee of Entergy, this was something that we all rose to the occasion to address. Just for me personally, I had just sold my house and left New Orleans. I sold my house at the beginning of August and was gone when the storm actually hit. So I was in here and felt helpless and devastated by what I was watching. So as an employee of the company, what I reflected on, and today still, is that we had to evacuate 1,900 employees who lived and worked in New Orleans. So it was a continuity of business, a continuity of living that everyone else was going through, but how did we do this? And I look back and think of Wayne Leonard and some of the other leaders at the time, Rod West and Dan Packer for Entergy New Orleans, and they stayed throughout the devastation, and then everybody came back to and chose to come back to New Orleans. So right after... we lost all our customers. And yeah, this is why it's unique to any other experience, that automatically from one day to the next, everybody's gone. And so we had about $1 billion of damages, 90,000 square miles of Gulf Coast that were devastated. And then for us, our entire customer base. So we had to figure out what to do next. And part of that what to do next included filing for bankruptcy, because overnight we had no customers. I'll stop yep. there though, because I get sort of on a roll when I start talking about this, because it does bring out a lot of emotions.
Well, a lot of people don't realize that, right? Obviously, the entire grid is impacted, and there's no one here. Most everybody evacuated, and then there's no draw for service, and there's no ability to draw for service, for quite a lengthy period. It actually wasn't as long as a lot of people had anticipated, but because of the breadth and depth of the damage, but nonetheless, no income.
And we had to get creative, and I think we did that well. And so the professional part and the challenge, that one of the things I'm most proud of, and in my 31 years at Entergy, was right after Katrina, there were a number of us that were working out of the Washington, D.C. office. And so we tried to work with the White House and passing some legislation. We also worked with our congressional delegation that was instrumental. We worked with our state leaders, and we figured out that we could work with the Department of Housing and Urban Development to qualify to get community development block grants. And it was a highly unusual step, and it was something that we went and looked at what had happened after 9/11 with Con Edison in New York. Again, it had never been done before, and the personal part was I was up in D.C., and I was the policy nerd. I was not the person that would go on the Hill and lobby. And they sent me to HUD, and they said, well, go see if they can help us. And so I was like, okay, it's like, let Mikey do it. He'll, try anything. And so they sent me, we figured it out. We go, okay, well, what did they do after 9/11? And then everyone, the political, forces, everybody came together and coalesced around us, and it took everyone. It was folks in Mississippi and folks in Louisiana, and in the White House that finally said, "Okay, we're going to help this city come back." So it was a huge, tremendous effort, and we were able to get $200 million in these community development block grants to help our customers and help our city.
So it would be important to explain the alternative to folks, because without that type of funding coming your way, everything that you did to bring back the system would have been reflected in rates, right?
That's right. And because we received the federal recovery funds, and it was through a combination of infrastructure investments and resilience projects and all of those, if we had not, all of that would have gone directly to our customers, and everybody would have had to decide, can we afford to even bring customers back? And
that would have been a telling moment for a whole lot of people, right, as to whether or not we were going to be able to come back, quite frankly.
That's exactly right. And I do think us being here, meaning us, Entergy, Big Entergy, the parent company of Entergy New Orleans and Entergy Louisiana and Entergy Mississippi, Arkansas, and Texas, all of that is headquartered here. And we were momentarily displaced, like many people, in Jackson, Mississippi, and we had others in Texas and Arkansas. And as you can imagine, all of those governors wanted to take advantage of the fact that we could not be in New Orleans, and that perhaps they could entice the company to relocate its headquarters. And we didn't just come back, we doubled down. We came back and we said, we are part of the fabric of this city, and it is important for us to do this. So with the $200 million in federal funding and with everyone else that supported the comeback of New Orleans, Entergy chose to make this our home again.
You know, I'm one of those, I understand that the utility business is not an easy business, you know, because there's a lot of things outside of your control. But those dollars at that point in time definitely link forward to where we find ourselves today, right, as it relates to the grid.
That's exactly right. And it was an investment to get everything back up and running. This is 20 years ago now. And it is also the continued investment that's required to prepare for the storms that are coming in faster and stronger. So you fast forward from 20 years ago to, 4 years ago when we had Ida, and we had, you know, it was not a flood event. It was actually just a strong, or maybe stronger storm that sat on New Orleans for a while. And now what we're having to do is build to a higher standard and a more resilient standard, which can be done. But it takes, again, that reinvestment in infrastructure to make sure that everyone is prepared.
And some ingenuity, because I'm going to tell you, you know, in my neighborhood, y'all put those, we were one of the first neighborhoods, I think, y'all started distributing those sleeves that you put down the side of the power poles at Entergy Louisiana. And I know you're using them in New Orleans as well. You know, it's interesting, since those have been deployed, in at least in my neighborhood, and I know that's not a complete total sampling, we have not had a single pole snap, other than when, like, an 18-wheeler hit one on the I-10 service road. But everything snaps when an 18-wheeler hits it, right?
Right.
But we have not had a pole snap since that time.
Well, and you're starting to see more examples like that in just our resilience. We had phase one of our resilience request of the council that they approved last year, and it's about $100 million or so. And so it's over 2025 and 26. You're starting to see that, and it's going to be impacting the entire city, and then we're going to go back in and talk to the city council and our customers about investing more. We want to be more like Florida. If you'll notice that Florida for the, the last 20, 25 years has been doing this a year over year over year. And so the investments have paid off. And that's really where we're at that inflection point in New Orleans. You know, we continue to be prepared, even if we don't get a storm, and knock on wood, I'm knocking on wood.
Knock a couple more times, please.
That's right. And we have to be ready either way. And I was listening to you talk to Michael Hecht right before this, and he said that, you know, we elect a mayor, and in the election ways of talking about this, we elect our elected officials for crisis, not just for ribbon cuttings. And it's really what our utility is here to do. We have to perform every day, but we also have to perform in the most critical, you know, occurrences such as a storm.
And I did want people to understand, too, I mean, we kind of focus on what's there right in front of us, right? Our utility pole on our street. Mm-hmm. But even as important are your transmission corridors that are out there that that take a lot of maintenance and a lot of work there to make sure that that power is able to be distributed to the local areas.
That's right. And you know, the good news and the bad news for your listeners, right? For the good news for Entergy New Orleans is that we don't have a lot of transmission in Orleans Parish. We have some, and that we're upgrading that, but we have a lot of it in Entergy Louisiana. And mm-hmm. so we are the beneficiaries of other customers paying for the upgrades in transmission that get power to us. And so it is certainly a thoughtful process where we deal with this on a regional basis. Electrons don't just stop at the parish line.
Yeah, no, for certain. Final thoughts?
Just that we're so excited about the new things that we're doing, and you talked a little bit about it in terms of this lease, but we also have some new kinds of technology that we're looking at, drones and inspections by drones. We're also looking at smart relays. And so we're looking at a lot of things that we know will help if we have outages, bring people back up that much more quickly. I love this city, and I think we all do, and I know you do too. So I just appreciate being able to share this information with our customers and with your listeners.
Well, thank you so much. I hope to see you at one of our favorite restaurants, which is where I usually see you. I've been on the lookout for you, but you haven't been there, so you must be cheating on us somewhere else. I'm not certain, but I'll reserve judgment.
We'll have to meet up with you and your wife again soon. Thank you so much, Norm.
All righty. Deanna Rodriguez, CEO of Entergy New Orleans, thank you. Have a great Labor Day weekend. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Hey, are you excited as I am? Tiger football starts Saturday. Number 9 LSU kicks off the season against number 4 Clemson Saturday in South Carolina. And we're going to start our coverage game day 2 o'clock with Mike Dettillier and Herb Tyler and the Gulf Coast Mega Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. We will broadcast live from the Acme Oyster House in Baton Rouge. Come out and count down to the big game at Acme with 16 surround sound TVs and the best drink specials. It's a great place to hang out for LSU and college football. All thanks to the good folks at MAP Construction. Then at 4:30, catch LSU's official LSU pregame show. Kick off with the voice of the Tigers, Chris Blair, and color analyst Jacob Hester. And at 6:30, the LSU Tigers versus the Clemson Tigers Saturday on WWL and streaming live on the free Odyssey app. I don't know about you. I cannot wait. I am so looking forward to Saturday night. Hope you are as well. We'll be right back. Check in with Scoot when we return. Stay with us. So, folks, just a reminder, LSU this weekend, 6:30. And today, the Saints have to cut their roster down to 53, I think that number is. And there will be we will be talking about that this evening, right? Jeff Nowak is tracking all of the Black and Gold's moves until they whittle the team down to the 53-man roster. And you'll find the tracker on the front page at WWL.com and on our WWL social platforms, Twitter and Facebook. And this has to be done by 3 p.m. Today. So that actually means about 1,200 players will be let go across the NFL all day today, and you'll be able to follow that for sure. And just a reminder that we will be broadcasting live from the Presbyter Friday. Tommy Tucker, myself, Scoot. It's going to be, I think it's going to be a good time. We'll be telling a lot of the untold stories, things that you've not heard before with all likelihood, and that's what we hope to accomplish on Friday. And do we have Scoot Coleman?
Yes.
All right.
I haven't
Scoot
been
Johnson's
cut. I haven't
what
been
have
cut.
Up, Scoot?
I have not been cut. I'm not on the cut list.
Hey, we can. Hey, I got a flag we can burn, the Clemson Tiger flag.
Yeah, let's burn that. Let's burn that. All right, it is official with all that's going on. This is big breaking news. Taylor Swift, Travis Kelce, engaged. All right, we'll talk about that and a lot more coming up. We're going to even talk about politics.
Did he win the lottery?
Oh, did he? Did he?
Scoot's up next. Stay tuned, folks. Have a great evening. We'll see you again in the morning.